Welcome to Singer Leeweck's podcast series, brought to you by the professionals of Singer Leeweck from various areas of expertise. Our podcast series touch upon different subjects related to growth, strategy, tax advisory services, and technical and regulatory matters.
Thanks for tuning into our podcast today. My name is Rob Schlenner, and I'm the partner in charge of audit and assurance practice for Singer Leeweck. We service clients throughout the Western United States and are a full-service middle market top 100 CPA firm. Today we're here to discuss the measures companies should be taking to be ready for the impact of the new lease accounting standards. One thing I learned very early in my career is to surround myself with really good people. They usually make you look great. One of the best in the tenant-only representation space is my good friend Kevin Mitchell. Kevin's a corporate managing director with Savills Studley, which is one of the largest corporate real estate advisory firms in the country. He's an industry veteran with more than 15 years of experience, focusing exclusively on the needs of tenants and owner-occupants. Kevin specializes in helping companies make good business decisions with respect to the real estate they occupy. He's also an attorney. Thanks for being here with me today, Kevin, and I'm glad you're agreeing to shed some light on this topic.
Thanks, Rob. I'm happy to participate and provide whatever help I can.
Great. So by way of background, last fall, Kevin and I got together one afternoon for some coffee, and we started talking about things that were going on in each of our worlds. And we started talking in depth about the new lease accounting standards that were scheduled to be rolled out in the coming year. And at that time, we decided that we wanted to educate anyone who was interested in what the impact of these new changes might bring to them. So today's discussion is going to be a little different than your typical presentation in the sense that our focus is going to be less on the technical aspects of these rule changes and more on the measures that companies actually need to take to prepare for them. You know, things like which processes will be affected, where the new risks are going to lie, and what you need to do to mitigate these. Because it's such a significant and relatively complicated topic, we'll be covering some of the high-level concepts today, and we intend to build on this over the next few podcasts. So let's get started with an overview. FASB has instituted some rule changes that will require pretty much all leases to be reported on company balance sheets. Now, this deviates from the current treatment in the sense that today and prior to these rules taking effect, only capital leases are accounted for on the balance sheet of financial statements. So the average tenant occupying a floor, let's say, in an office building or even a manufacturing facility under what we would call an operating lease, only reports lease payments as expenses on their income statement. However, going forward under the new rules, regardless of whether it is considered an operating lease or a capital lease, they both will now have balance sheet components to account for. So this is a big difference from what we're used to today. So from a timing standpoint, the rules take effect for years beginning after December 15th of 2019 for most private companies. So when I say that, just think January 1st, 2020. So here we are mid-year in 2017. That means we have about 2.5 years before the standards become effective. But for public companies and some nonprofits, the standards are effective for their annual periods beginning a year earlier. So in this case, think January 1st, 2019. Early adoption is also permitted for all entities. The other thing that's relevant to timing are the new revenue recognition standards that take effect in 2018. Even though companies can wait until 2019 or 2020 to change their lease accounting, I anticipate that some companies will want to make the change in 2018 to avoid a couple of back-to-back years of unusual financial statement presentations. So all that being said, one of the main takeaways I want our listeners to have from this discussion is that the time to address these rule changes is now. So let's explore this a little further, and let me just play devil's advocate for a second. So Kevin, I'm a private company, and the rules don't come into effect for me until late in 2019. Why do I have to address this now?
So the short answer is that you need to start addressing these rule changes when you're negotiating your leases. And the reality is if you have leases that are going to be negotiating between now and when the rules take effect in 2019, chances are that the term of those leases is going to be longer than 2 years. And so if that's the case, then those new leases that you're negotiating now are going to come into the purview of the new rules. And if that's the case, you need to negotiate a lease in anticipation of that outcome. If you don't do that, there's a high risk of unintended consequences in the context of the way you structure your lease.
So most companies I talk with think they can wait until after their lease is signed to address these rules. And you're saying that there's measures that they can take now before they sign their lease. Is that right?
Correct. There's things that they should be doing before they sign their lease.
Okay. Can you explain that to us?
Yeah, absolutely. So if you look at most companies today, they have two distinct decision-making processes. They have their real estate decision-making process, and they have their financial reporting process. In the context of the real estate decision-making process, they hire a broker, and to simplify the process, that broker goes out, negotiates a bunch of building alternatives, ultimately presents the company with an NPV or discounted cash flow analysis to help them in decision-making in terms of picking a building, and the ultimate outcome of that process is a signed lease. Once that process occurs, the lease is thrown over the fence to the financial reporting process, and at that time, the basic question that's asked is, what, if any, impact does this have on my primary financial metrics? Under today's rules, as you alluded to earlier, Rob, a majority of the leases are operating leases and therefore don't have any impact on the financial statements. And so under today's environment, you have an NPV analysis, which is sufficient for decision making in terms of the real estate decision making process. And then you have a financial reporting process where there's a low risk of unintended consequences. That's very different than the landscape that we can see under the new rules. But before I go into that, Rob, quick question for you. How many of your clients report their financials on an NPV basis?
Well, actually, none of them.
Yeah. And that's exactly what I expected. And you know, just hold that as a footnote. But basically, under the new rules, what's going to happen now is because even those operating leases are going to have to be on the balance sheet and will have a financial impact, the reality is that now there is a significant risk of unintended consequences if you wait until after your lease to see how it's going to be reported. By the same token, today, for most companies, the only control that they have in place in terms of having visibility in terms of what that impact will be is an NPV analysis. But to your point, very few, if any, companies report their financials on an NPV basis. In that regard, what this rule change is actually going to do is it's going to create a situation where the NPV analysis now provides insufficient context for decision-making in the real estate decision-making process. And by the same token, there's a higher risk of unintended consequence in the financial reporting process. And to underscore this, I think we can both imagine scenarios where maybe two building alternatives have the same NPV analysis in terms of the discounted cash flow, but can have very different impacts on the financial metrics, whether it be EBITDA, shareholder equity, et cetera. Do you agree?
Oh, absolutely, Kevin. So facing these dynamics, what's the solution that most people are planning to take today?
The reality is that most companies are not properly prepared, Rob. They believe that they can address these rule changes strictly within the confines of their financial reporting process, essentially enlisting an accounting firm to address the rule changes when they happen in 2019 after their leases are signed. This is obviously a very important part of the process, but it's incomplete.
And that's because the lease is already signed, right?
Exactly right. What you and your colleagues are expert at is knowing how to report leases under the new rules. But the opportunity that's missed by waiting to examine the financial impact until after the lease is signed is the opportunity to structure the lease in a manner that's optimal with respect to whatever your financial metrics are. Again, EBITDA, shareholder equity, etc. Depending on how you look at it, failing to do so either creates a high risk of unintended consequence or the inverse, which is a missed opportunity to structure the lease optimally and minimize the impact on your financial metrics. And depending on what your financial metrics are, and different companies have different objectives, you're going to have a different strategy in terms of the way that you want to structure your leases.
So we've gone over a lot of things so far, so let me summarize a little bit for everybody. So what you're saying is, in order for companies to properly prepare for these new rule changes, they certainly need to enlist the services of an accounting firm in the context of their financial reporting process to make sure their leases are properly reported and recorded. But they also must understand what the financial impact will be up front during the real estate decision-making process before they sign their leases, correct?
Correct. Or to say it another way, you would never sign a lease without knowing what your rent is. So why would you sign a lease without knowing what the financial impact is on your primary financial metrics? This is exactly what my team specializes in, negotiating leases upfront to minimize the impact on whatever your company's financial metrics are. Working together, the two of us can provide a two-tiered solution for the rule changes that actually addresses the full scope of their impact, structuring leases optimally in the context of the real estate decision-making process, and then properly reporting those leases in the context of the financial reporting process.
So earlier you mentioned the opportunity to structure your lease optimally or the risk of not doing so and having unintended consequences. What do you estimate the magnitude in dollars are at stake by failing to address these issues in the negotiation process up front?
Excellent question, Rob. So there's a variety of examples I could share where two building alternatives are either neutral from an NPV standpoint or actually point in the wrong direction but have a dramatically different impact on the financial statements. I believe we're reviewing some of these examples in our next podcast, but to give you a general sense of the magnitude, let's take a EBITDA-focused company, or better yet, a private equity company that has multiple EBITDA-focused companies. There are individual terms and leases that can have a $500,000 to $1 million plus swing in terms of EBITDA impact, depending on how they're negotiated. When you think of all the terms in a lease that can have an impact, and you think of a company that has multiple locations, and the fact that these companies are operating in industries that sometimes trade at 5, 7, 10 times EBITDA, the impact can get very substantial very quickly.
A lot of good information, Kevin. Thanks very much for your time today in actually teeing up our next podcast, where we will indeed review some very specific examples on how leases can be structured differently to create very different reporting outcomes on the financial statements. Thanks again, everyone, for joining us. If you have any questions, feel free to reach out to me, Rob Schlenner, at area code 949-261-8600. Or my email address, rschlenner, that's R-S-C-H-L-E-N-E-R, @singerlewack.com. And have a great day.